The following is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.
Skulls here, and joining me, my good pal, Mackenzie Irwin, Samfiru Tamarkin, ready to rock and roll. We're talking employment law over the next hour. If you have questions, pull up a chair, grab a phone, and get on conversation, get on air, and ask your questions. It could be a simple severance question, right? Could be a question about your boss, maybe something about vacation, could be anything of that nature that we've talked about on the show over the last, 13 years. So join us, 416-870-6400. Beyond that, you can always email us. We're going to try to get to some email a little later on when we get through our main topic. I'll tell you about that in a second. But that is help@employmentlawyer.ca. That's any time to reach Mackenzie and her crew. And then on that side of the phone, it's 1-855-821-5900. I'll throw that out towards you several times during the hour. So if you just missed it, have no fear. You can write the number down, call Mackenzie on your own time. And then also that website we always talk about. This one's a beauty because it gives you access to that severance calculator, which is your sneaky, not-so-sneaky little way to find out what your severance actually should be. It's open to the public. It's free. It's anonymous. It's been used literally by millions of Canadians across the country, and it'll tell you exactly in about 30 seconds, give or take, how much severance you're actually owed. It's not the number on the paper they just handed you. They're trying to rip you off. That's their job. And you go to pocketemploymentlawyer.ca and use that severance app. You can use it now while we're sitting here and chatting. But we'll get to that, all of that, in just a bit. We're going to get to the week that was. Mackenzie is all strapped in, ready to go. What's happening, girl? What do you got for me this morning?
Yeah, so this week I had a very interesting call with a gentleman. He's in his 40s. Okay. And he worked for a municipality for about 10 and a half years in their management department. And so he worked his way up throughout that time frame to his management position. Throughout that time, he'd had a pristine disciplinary record, no disciplinary action taken, no warnings, no pips, no anything like that. And he had pretty glowing performance reviews throughout that 10 and a half years. In fact, when his supervisor went on vacation at the beginning of the month, he was actually tagged to cover for him. So just goes to show, they valued him. He worked his way up. They trusted him to cover for a supervisor for their vacation. And it was interesting. So when that supervisor went on vacation, he was brought into a meeting with HR, and he was told that the meeting was because they were looking into something that his supervisor had done. They wanted to ask him a few questions. And so they asked him about the questions about his supervisor, about things that his supervisor had done in the past. And then all of a sudden, the meeting really turned into HR kind of turned the focus of the meeting to him and his actions. They started asking him questions about certain purchases he had made. These purchases he advised them were made with his supervisor's approval. And they began nitpicking his timesheets. Okay. Yeah. So this meeting, it was strange because he was called in for one purpose, and then all of a sudden the purpose kind of switched to a focus on him and his performance and his actions in his role. And so at the conclusion of that meeting, he was sent home on a paid suspension. They said, we got to look into this a little bit further. We're going to put you on a paid suspension pending the outcome of our investigation.
See what's coming.
Yeah. You can see the writing on the wall. And in fact, 3 days later.
There you go.
and just before, it was interesting, just before his supervisor returned from vacation, he was called into a meeting with HR, and they fired him for cause. And so for our listeners, we go over what the for cause terminations are. Mm-hmm. It's a very rare scenario where the employer gets to let you go without paying you any severance. And so that's obviously a pretty big deal. It's only in very, very specific circumstances where the employer is allowed to do that. And the bar is set very high. And I mean, it's called, the courts refer to it as the capital punishment of employment law, meaning that it's reserved for only very serious misconduct. You know, for example, fraud or theft, things like that. Now, in this situation, this gentleman, he's getting terminated for cause. They send him home. They've paid him nothing, no severance. He gives me a call, tells me his story. And certainly this is a situation where the employer does not have cause. The allegations against him were, they were telling him that, they were firing him for cause for time theft and making unauthorized purchases. That is certainly doesn't, that kind of conduct certainly does not rise to the level of willful misconduct. You know, he was acting under his supervisor's authority. There was no previous disciplinary action on his record. And the employer is really going to have a tough time here proving that there weren't any other, you know, more or sorry, less severe forms of punishment or disciplinary action that they could have taken that were perhaps more appropriate given his long service and his glowing disciplinary record. In addition to that, I think it's really important here that that, you know, they never, because the HR's investigation was done while his supervisor was on vacation, presumably that supervisor was never asked or questioned, or his side of the story was never brought in. So there's a big, this employer has a big issue here in terms of the integrity of their investigation. And then on top of that, the allegations that they're relying on to assert just cause are just not, they just don't rise to that level that would permit them to terminate him without giving him any severance. And so, you know, we're going to hop on the scene and we're going to help him out, but he's likely entitled to, you know, upwards of 12 to 14 months of severance. And so in addition to that, that severance, the way that the employer has acted opens them up. It exposes them to additional damages, moral or punitive damages, for improperly asserting just cause when they don't have it. I think it's really important here that asserting just cause is a pretty traumatic thing. Some people don't realize this. It's got a serious impact on that employee's mental health when that employer is improperly asserting just cause. It's not only emotionally traumatic, but it also has a significant financial implications. And so, you know, many of us in the current economy are living paycheck to paycheck. And abruptly losing your job without any severance could have a pretty grim impact on one's finances. In addition to that, I would say, you know, if you're terminated for cause, you're usually disentitled to employment insurance. So that financial impact is not only that, number one, you're not getting the severance that you're owed, but number two, you're likely getting blocked from accessing employment insurance benefits that you are entitled to. So it really makes it that, you know, there's the emotional impact, but there's also a pretty significant financial impact. Another impact of terminating someone for cause when you don't have it is it makes it a lot harder for that individual to find a new job.
Right.
They usually don't have a reference letter. You know, there's no references from that employer, especially someone who's got, you know, 10 and a half years of service with one employer. When you're going out and looking for new jobs, it makes it a lot more difficult for you to find a new job and secure a new job when you don't have that support or that reference from your previous employer. That's a challenge. So certainly something that we take into consideration when these employers have improperly asserted just cause. And the courts do recognize that, you know, an employer, they're going to penalize an employer for jumping to cause or improperly asserting just cause, because it does have a pretty profound impact on that employee and on their financial, mental state, and on their ability to look for new work. So we're certainly going to hop on the scene here and help him get his full severance entitlements from his employer. And, you know, if we have to, you know, it certainly does expose that employer to those additional moral and punitive damages if we have to pursue it in court.
Well, I think a lot of the time as well, these employers, you know, they may know this, especially if it's a larger, more sophisticated employer, what they've done. But they're assuming that, you know, small, little, weak employees going to walk away with their tail between their legs and not try to fight, thereby saving them, in this case, you know, a year's severance. And they're kind of counting on that. And if it doesn't happen that way, then, yeah, they get slapped pretty hard, as you said, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so that's the reality. You know, it's traumatic. It's very, very, it has a huge impact on an employee when you've been terminated for cause, especially when there are allegations of misconduct. It can be embarrassing to come forward with that, but certainly the employers are banking on at least, you know, the majority of employees who they've terminated for cause not doing anything about it and just, you know, taking their severance letter home, you know, cutting their losses and hoping to find a new job right away. And the reality is you're entitled to severance, and it's likely going to be a lot harder than you think to find a new job without that support from your previous employer.
And one of the main topics I want to talk about today, and you sent along, Mackenzie, good one too, factors that impact your severance entitlements. Want to get into the first one here before we get into a break, get us warmed up. Now, whether you have an employment contract with an enforceable termination clause, there's lots to talk about this one, but we'll get started on this one. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so that's the number one thing that we look at when analyzing someone's severance entitlements. And the reality is, it's the only way that an employer can limit your full severance entitlements is by having very specific language in there, legally enforceable language in there to limit your entitlements. It's very difficult to do. You know, the vast majority, I would say, of termination clauses that I see are illegal and unenforceable. And so it's really, really important. I can't stress enough. To have your severance package and your contract reviewed by a lawyer, because, you know, we could look to you. It could look to you like an enforceable termination clause. You know, to the layman's person, anyone reading it in plain English can say, "Oh, that looks pretty enforceable to me." But the reality is, the courts are releasing decisions regularly, and as an employment lawyer, it's our job to stay on top of the law as it develops and understand, okay, what that very specific language is, and whether that applies. How we can analyze your termination clause to see whether it truly is enforceable. We just had a recent decision argued by my colleague. He just successfully argued a new case that in Ontario renders many termination clauses unenforceable. And so those are things that as employment lawyers, we're trained to see, we're trained to analyze those, stay on top of the law as it develops. And likely something that you like reading it to anyone will say, "Oh, well, it's too bad there's a termination clause in my employment contract." That might not be the case. And so it's still worthwhile reaching out and having that reviewed so that you can make sure that you are truly getting the full severance that you're entitled to.
And with that, we'll get into that break that I mentioned, back with more of this topic. And of course, this will give you a moment to grab a phone and reach out to Mackenzie. Employment Law Show right here on 640 Toronto.
You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.
We are back at an Employment Law Show. John Scholes, Mackenzie Irwin from Samfiru Tamarkin LLP. Reach out to Mackenzie on your own time. Always encouraged to do so. Maybe to chat you want to have privately. Won't cost you a dime to pick up a phone, and that is 1-855-821-5900, help@employmentlawyer.ca, the email address, which we might try to get through some of those this morning on the show. But beyond that, we'd love to have you on air with us, asking your questions. Reminder, there are no silly questions. In fact, something you're thinking of and wanting to ask is probably in the minds of thousands of others who have either listened or listened to this show. In the meantime, we're talking about lots of things under the topic of, you know, factors that impact your severance entitlements. We talked about the employment contract and the enforceability of it, having one. I think kind of a sidebar to that, Mackenzie, is, you know, people, even we've been doing the show this long and a lot of people have learned this, but quite often when we say on air that it's actually better to have a job where there's a no contract or a handshake or just a nod, tip of the hat, people panic because people love paperwork. They love contracts. You know, they get a mortgage or a marriage license or they buy a car. They love oodles of papers and things to sign, so they think they're backed up. It's the exact opposite with employment. You don't want a contract. You want a handshake. That allows you have a full quiver of employment law arrows with you if you don't have a contract, right? As opposed to having a 30-pager, because there's going to be stuff in there that ain't too good for you, is there?
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, any employment contract is there, and the sole purpose of that employment contract is to benefit the employer. And right. So if you don't have an employment contract in place, if you're working under a handshake deal, you're in the best case scenario. And so I get calls from employees all the time when they say, you know, oh, you know, I got a promotion and I'm really nervous. I want to take something to my employer and propose some sort of employment contract because I want to make sure that I've got everything in writing. And generally speaking, you do want to have things in writing, but in terms of the employment contract, it's to your benefit to have no employment contract in place. And so if you're talking in terms of, oh, I've got a raise or I got a promotion and, you know, I wanted to put something in writing, what I usually say is, oh, just send them an email. Saying,
yeah.
Exactly. You send them an email. You say, I just want to confirm further to our meeting that we just had. I'm super excited that my new pay rate is going to be X and that my new title is going to be Y. Looking forward to it. That is the best case scenario. Because you don't have that employment contract in place, you don't have any terms that are kind of limiting any entitlements that you might have upon termination, and that is, again, that is the best case scenario. So, yeah, it's funny. Employers, you want to have the for the employers out there, you want to have those employment contracts in place, but for an employee, that's the best case scenario.
Got Frank on the call this morning. Hey, Frank, thanks for taking the time in the rain to call, pal. I know your wife says here you just got a package. We don't name employers, but that's okay. Give us some details of what happened, pal.
Yeah, well, they offering her three months fully salary with the benefits, and after the 3 months, she's been with them for about 45 years.
Forty-five years?
Yeah, mind you, 5 years she was off, which we have the last child, so I don't know if that counts or not. So they offering her 3 months of full salary, and then they offer her $120,000 for severance, whatever. Is that good enough or is not?
So I in terms of how much they've offered, I'm not sure in terms of the dollar value, but certainly if you've been there for 45 years, your full severance entitlements are on the high end there, usually around 24 months. And so I would advise, Frank, I would advise your wife to give us a call and I can have a more in-depth chat with her, review all of her paperwork, and give her a more thorough analysis of what her full severance entitlement should be.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sound good? Frank, yeah. I'm going to give you that number. Yeah, you bet. I'm going to give you that number right now and to reach out to Mackenzie for sure. That is a 1-855-821-5900. Imagine that. That might be, Mackenzie, as far as phone calls are concerned, a new record. I mean, Frank's wife started there in 1979. Think about that. That's when she started
Wow.
working for this company. So, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but without question, that sounds like at least 24 months, possibly one of those odd cases where the threshold could possibly be even higher, right?
Absolutely. And so, yeah, the Ontario Court of Appeal actually recently weighed in on this. And typically speaking, the ceiling on severance is 24 months. But there are those very, very unique situations where there are certain characteristics, and certainly I would say 45 years of service is one of those, likely one of those characteristics where that that ceiling is not appropriate, and the courts have awarded more than the 24-month ceiling. And so 26 months, 30 months, those, you can get into that range if you have those extenuating circumstances. And, you know, I think there's a strong argument to be made that 45 years of service with one employer are one of those situations.
Yeah, 1979. I mean, Van Halen was a new band at that point. That's how long she'd been working there. That's crazy. We are talking about in the show this morning factors that impact your severance entitlements. Here's another big one, especially now with the aging workforce in this country. That is age, right, Mackenzie? Give me some details on that.
Yeah, so age is one of the major factors that the courts will look at to that will impact your severance entitlements. And so typically speaking, what you see is that older employees get more severance. And certainly we're seeing an aging workforce here. People aren't retiring in their late 50s, 60s. People are working into their late 60s. I have clients who are working into their 70s, and you know, everyone's situation is different, but some people, I have some clients who just love their job and they're past the retirement age, but they just, you know, they want to keep working. And so typically speaking, older employees, the older you are, the more severance you are entitled to. However, that doesn't mean that if you're a young employee, that you're not really entitled to much in terms of severance. Your age is simply one factor that impacts your severance entitlements. And absolutely, if you're a young employee, you should still be seeking having your severance package reviewed, seeking advice on what your full severance entitlements are. You shouldn't just take your employer's word for it. But typically speaking, older employees get more severance. There are, certain situations where a younger employee, your age may be a factor that kind of lengthens your notice period. Each situation, each termination has to be taken and analyzed on their specific facts. And so certainly, if you're in that younger employee category, you should still be having your package reviewed.
You betcha. And we're going to review lots more, and we're going to get to some live phone calls, of course. David, thank you so much for standing by for a moment, pal. What's going on with you today?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I have more of a question just regarding my current position. So I have been with this company for 11 years, love my job, love what I do, love my salary structure, everything. I have a bonus, a percentage of my base salary bonus structure every year. It's performance-based. And then we also have a kind of company-wide profit sharing that is every year as well. However, I've been looking at my contract, looking at my past contracts with this company, and I've noticed that really that there's no indication of the profit sharing or how the metrics are in terms of how it's calculated. We recently had our past president pass away last December. Under the CFO is now taken over as acting president. But, you know, I'm just more thinking myself, should that profit sharing metric, should that be in the contract somewhere? Is that just something, again, it just seems to kind of come off the whim every year? I'm sure there's metrics behind it, but it's just not disclosed to me.
Right. I come across many employees who are in exactly your situation, David. And again, similarly to, you know, we were discussing whether it's to your benefit to even have a contract in place. It's still, I think this is not a situation where you want to necessarily reopen or give your employer the opportunity to reopen negotiations or insert new terms and negotiate a new contract. But certainly, what might make sense here is perhaps sending, getting something in writing and sending an email to have your employer put something in writing in terms of how the profit sharing is calculated. It's not necessary in terms of your termination entitlements, if you were terminated, to have that in addressed in your employment contract. What's more important is that, number one, that you're receiving it every year, that it's a regular part and integral part of your overall compensation. That's what's more important in terms of your termination entitlements. But in terms of having more transparency in terms of how they're calculating your profit sharing, it's something that some employers just won't disclose that information. They keep it very discretionary, and that's their prerogative, but certainly worthwhile trying to get something in writing from them in terms of putting down those metrics.
Okay. Well, perfect. Thank you very much.
Thanks, David. Please feel free to follow up to us if you've had that sort of conversation with the boss, with your employer, to reach out to Mackenzie. Any other matters, of course, 1-855-821-5900. But Employment Law Show continues. This is 640 Toronto.
You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.
The Employment Law Show, Mackenzie Irwin. You want to reach out to Mackenzie and her team anytime at the firm, stlawyers.ca, and you want to call 1-855-821-5900. Beyond email, by the way, which is help@employmentlawyer.ca, you can also use pocketemploymentlawyer.ca. That's an informational website for you, free and anonymous, really easy to navigate, and it will answer many of your questions that you hear asked and answered on this show, plus free access to that severance calculator. Had a had a text a short time ago, Mackenzie, you may have seen this, basically said, what happens when the employer lawyer that you're dealing with refuses to negotiate? They dig in their heels. What do you do?
Yeah, this is something that happens quite often. I get it all the time. You know, we send a letter saying, you know, my client's entitled to X. They either, you know, refuse to respond, don't respond at all, or they tell me to go kick rocks. Happens all the time. Employers expect that, you know, if you tell them to go away, they expect that someone will just give up. You know, they're not willing to negotiate. This is going to be something that is, you know, it's going to be such a hard fought battle. It's not always the case. Sometimes that's just their first line of defense. They expect that a certain percentage of people who get a, sorry, we don't negotiate response are just going to give up, throw their hands up and call it a day. That's not what we do here. My firm, we're very tenacious, and we don't stop until we've got your employer making sure that they're paying the severance that you're owed. And so, happens. What happens when they refuse to negotiate? We simply proceed with the next steps. We push them farther. So whether that means filing a claim, filing a human rights complaint, we take it to the next step. And sometimes that's just what the employer needs to see to take you seriously. They need to see it in your claim laid out in black and white, filed with the courts, in order to really take it seriously and negotiate what you're truly owed. So something that does happen, and it's simply one step in the process, and not something that is going to stop any lawyer at our firm.
So there you go. Don't feel intimidated to reach out to Mackenzie anytime, because they've they're used to dealing with this stuff. We're also talking about factors that will affect your severance entitlements, and this one's funny. Number three plays right into what I think it was David or Frank said a couple breaks ago, and that is length of service. His wife, a 45-year employee of her particular company, so I think we covered that. But give me some details on that, about common myths, etc., when it comes to length of service, Mackenzie. What do you think?
Yeah. So again, generally speaking, the longer you've been with your company, the more severance that you're entitled to. But it's certainly a myth about severance that only long service employees get significant severance awards. That's just simply not the case. Each one is situational, but certainly the courts do recognize, you know, some short service employees they can get substantial severance awards as well. We've got, there are scenarios where the courts have awarded someone with a year or a year and a half of service upwards of 12 months of pay in terms of their severance package. And there are a lot of reasons why. Well, first of all, if you've only been there a few years or less than 2 years, it could be very difficult for you to find new comparable work. And so the entire purpose of the of that severance is to help the employee bridge the gap between employment. And so short service employees can have difficulty bridging that gap. And there are many scenarios where the courts have awarded fairly significant severance packages to short service employees. On the other end, in terms of especially Frank's wife, you know, someone with 45 years of service, extraordinarily long service, they could be the courts could be awarding them over 24 months. And so your length of service is certainly an important factor in terms of figuring out what your full severance entitlements are.
Jack, thanks for standing by. Pal, for momentarily, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Sam. How is everybody?
Excellent. Loving it. What's your question, pal?
So the first thing is my wife used your company about a year ago and was very happy, very satisfied. It was a large settlement. But, Mackenzie, last week you were talking about a case you were doing. A female that works in retail was accused of theft and on and on and on. And then you got into a long settlement, say it was 18 months, and then the working notice. And then if they got a job after 6 months, what happens to the balance? Is it gone because you got a job, or do they get part of that balance that was never used? That was really my question.
So it depends. A very annoying answer that lawyers give, Jack, but it depends on how the settlement was structured. So there are ways that an employment lawyer can help you structure a settlement where if you find a new job, there is no impact on your entitlements. But typically speaking, if your employer has given you working notice, let's say 18 months of working notice, and you find a new job at 6 months, you're effectively resigning in order to start that new job. So you're going to want to make sure that you're properly negotiating the start date of your new job to coincide with your obligations to your previous employer.
Great. Thank you. That was very good. You have a great day.
Thanks, Jack. Appreciate you and hope your wife is doing well. And, of course, any other matters, you know where to call now. Just give Mackenzie a call. And we're going to continue our chat here for a couple more minutes before we get into a break and factors that impact your severance entitlements. These are all very important, whether you have an employment contract, your age, your length of service. And, of course, this one's kind of obvious, but it's worth mentioning, Mackenzie, that's your position, right?
Yeah, exactly. So your position is something that the courts will factor into what your severance entitlements are. And so the characteristics, what is your position? Do you work in some sort of niche position where there's just not a lot of work, other positions out there that are like yours? Do you have, does your position require some sort of specialized skill? It's something that might vitiate towards a longer notice period because if your position is niche, there's not a lot out there, it might take you a lot longer to find that new job. Another thing that I think is important here is that a lot of people, especially longer service employees, they're learning the skills of their position on the job. And if that's something that applies to you and you don't have any kind of specialized education or certification for learning those skills, it's gonna be a lot harder for you to find a comparable position because the other people hiring into that position or the other employers that are hiring that, they're gonna want to see that you have that certification, that you have that educational requirement in order to perform the skills necessary for your position. And so those are factors that the courts will consider to lengthen your notice period. They are going to say, okay, well, someone who learned the skills on the job is going to have a more difficult time finding that comparable position than someone who has the educational certification required for it.
And with that, let's get into that one last break, and we'll get to a little more on this particular topic. We're talking about factors that can adjust your, or at least fix, or at least adjust, rather, your severance offer and stuff like that. So we'll get to that. And your phone calls, by the way. Still got some time. We continue Employment Law Show right here, 640 Toronto.
You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.
And we're back. Mackenzie Irwin is who you want to reach out to on the firm side of things, and that's 1-855-821-5900. But I want to get to another call. John, thanks for hanging in through the break, pal. We were just talking about the factors that impact your severance, and age is a big one. Tell us your story. What's going on?
Well, a big part of it is I've been working for the same place for 20-something years now, and so I've hired a lawyer, a law firm that specializes in employment law. And so far, it's been 3 years in the running right now. And I know that the COVID was picked up the first year of it, but it's been like 3 years. And I've had seven lawyers in that time. Lawyers or aides to the lawyer. I've had seven in the last 3 years. They just keep transferring it over to someone else. They ask for disclosure information. I give them that. Then 3 months later, I get a new lawyer. They ask me again. It's the same law firm. It's cost me over $15,000 already of my money. And we haven't even gotten to a disclosure yet. We haven't really moved far with it. And it's cost me $15,000.
Jeez, man.
How much will all of this cost? Over a period of time, how long will it last?
Wow, I mean, that's a long time. I would say, the majority of the files that we deal with are resolved within 3 to 6 months, generally speaking. There is something to be said in terms of the courts have been backlogged a lot during COVID, but certainly you should be, on the eve or pushing, scheduling a trial 3 years in.
We're not even close. We haven't even met with the other lawyers.
It's been
3 years. Like I said, I keep getting shuffled around from one lawyer to another within their law firms. Oh, someone's not with us anymore. That person's left, and then.
John Craig, let me ask you a question. I mean, are you with an employment law firm, or is it Better Call Saul?
No, it's an employment law firm.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure about the $15,000 either, Mackenzie.
That's quite substantial, given where you're at. Certainly, I mean, as the client, you're entitled to choose who represents you. And if you're unhappy with the service you're getting at one firm, certainly
you can
feel free to reach out to someone at our firm, and we can see what we can do for you. But seem like a long time.
I had an offer about 2 years ago, and the offer was $30,000 after legal fees and the money I've already put out and taxes. I would get basically zero.
Was the option contingency usually not spread out there off the hop? I mean, that sounds weird.
I can't speak to what your firm has offered you, but certainly is likely an option at our firm that we offer. It's difficult for me to comment on that, John, but certainly as the client, you're entitled to choose who represents you as your lawyer. And so if you're unhappy with the service you're getting at a particular firm, sounds like you should be exploring other options.
Absolutely. One other quick question. A friend of mine's been in construction for 25 years. They were let go. Why is it that construction workers are not entitled to severance pays?
That's not true. Yeah, thanks for asking.
Exactly. Yeah, that is a great question and a very common misconception. And so certainly something that your friend should reach out to us, and we can get into that with in more detail with him. But that is false. A construction worker is entitled to severance.
Right. Because he's been working for the same place for over 20 years. And working Monday to Friday, never layoffs, never anything.
Oh yeah, no, he's
absolutely. Yeah, he should be reaching out and having his severance package properly reviewed, and certainly something we can help him with.
John, really appreciate the call and the points you brought up. But yeah, I guess twice, you know, you can give Mackenzie a call just to discuss your own situation where you stand, and for your pal as well. 1-855-821-5900. We're talking about factors that can affect your severance, and this is a big one as well, and that is availability of comparable employment. I mean, some people don't realize that if you're a high level CEO or fiduciary, there's going to be fewer jobs than if you're a barista, but that will affect your severance, not even the dollar amount, just the length and everything else, right?
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of the major factors that I think is probably most influential. Is what is your industry look like? Are you working in a declining industry? I have had many clients who are working, who've been terminated from, let's say, print news industry.
Oh.
That's a dying industry. I mean, there aren't really any comparable jobs out there, and so. If that's the situation, then certainly that's a factor that will lengthen the notice period, the severance that you're entitled to. I'm finding that there are more and more terminations going on in the GTA these days. Lots of big companies making a lot of cuts to their workforce. And so there are a lot of these industries that are getting impacted in terms of, they've got hiring freezes. They're letting people go. I'm seeing that a lot in the tech industry. So it depends. It absolutely is a factor. And so if your position, your industry is something that is declining or offloading, they're making a lot of cuts, they've got hiring freezes.
Right.
That is something that would certainly entitle you to more severance. On the other hand, if you're working in an industry that's booming, there's lots of new job openings, they're hiring like crazy, that's something that's going to likely shorten it. So certainly, availability of comparable employment, a huge factor that will be considered, that will impact the amount of severance you're entitled to.
And with that, we are complete. Thank you for your phone calls and reaching out. Beyond now, you can get a hold of Mackenzie. New problem, 1-855-821-5900. The number, help@employmentlawyer.ca. And that website, use it first, pocketemploymentlawyer.ca. We'll catch you next time here. Employment Law Show, 640 Toronto. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.